Welcome back, everybody, to another episode with Simply Gold. My name is Alex. I've got my team here today. I've got Kara Thomas, Chief of Staff, Mother Hen, all the different names. And then we've also got Kelsey Reynolds. I misspelled your name 1,000 times for different things. Putting your stuff in the payroll, writing your name on a sticky note. I was like, is it Reynolds or is it Reynolds?
You're grounded.
Kelsey just started. This is Kelsey's second time on the microphone. How's it going so far?
Great. I love it.
She's already said more today than she did 2 days ago.
I'm just saying.
I just soaked it all in last time.
We're gonna have our own soon. Mm-hmm. She's just getting comfortable.
Yeah, she's just getting comfortable. So I'm waiting for you to just come out of the box and get crazy.
We're getting there.
We've also got our special guest today. His name is Kevin Dawson, employee benefits consultant, 10 years running at USI, the world's the largest privately held insurance broker in the United States. Thanks so much for coming today, Kevin.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. My pleasure, man. You look sharp. I love that that suit, that watch, those shoes. I dressed down today. So,
you know, they always say dress to impress. And you know, in the podcast world, it's like you never know if you're doing audio or video or what. And so it's like just be prepared.
We are set up for video, but that's going to be something we're working on for the next 30 days or so. So that's why we got. This is our new studio. We're 50 or so episodes in, but this is only the second time we've recorded here. And we actually today have a whole new set coming of equipment. The nice. Same equipment, but in white. So that's our preparation for getting into the video. So we're going to probably put a tripod over here between these two chairs. Kara went ahead and put up the stuff on the wall. This cabinet was given to us by the previous tenant. So that was this thing probably costs $600. These chairs are like $200 each, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, I bought them. They were $160.
Yep.
A piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're comfortable though.
Yeah, worth it though.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
So Kevin drove all the way from Fort Worth, but I imagine, man, you're everywhere in this metroplex.
Everywhere. I told some friends not too long ago. I did the DFW 500 one day, so I live in South Fort Worth near Crowley, Burleson area. So drove to the office downtown Fort Worth, and then I had to drive to Denton for a lunch meeting. So I'm in Denton. Then I go to a prospective client of mine at the airport in Denton. Then I needed to drive to Westlake to go to the Fidelity campus. They had invited me to come check out their Cyber Fusion Center. So I'm at Fidelity's campus in Westlake, and then another vendor of ours had invited me to come to their client party all the way in Addison.
Oh my gosh.
So then I go from
He's
Fidelity.
Acting like it sucks. I bet it's awesome.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. So yeah, I leave there and then drive all to the other side of Dallas. Like this,
they invited me to their wedding. Like I just
it's just like I'm just making the rounds. And then I think I looked at the odometer that day. It was like 250-mile round trip.
Whoa.
I'm not worried about, I like to drive. I prefer to drive. But I mean,
I've only put half a tank of gas in. I've only used half a tank this week.
Well, lucky you.
I'm excited for that.
I have to fill up my tank. I'm a little less than a quarter.
I've saved more money in being in this office and gas and tolls.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, you've grinded 10 years. I mean, like you have deserved, I'm sure, the type of work day that you have where you get to cultivate relationships with people, really lean into their family and provide that extra level of service.
It's very much a relationship driven business. So I tell people, while I've been in industry 10 years, I grew up in this industry. I'm the son of a broker. And so my dad, in his best April Fool's joke ever, said, "Hey, come work for me." and
April Fool's on you.
Yeah. It's his best joke ever. And he just retired, in December of this past year, after 40 years being in the industry. And so to kind of watch him growing up and seeing how he approached the business, and then taking the way that he treats people, and then taking the knowledge and then saying, okay, I'm going to build on that legacy and approach how we've looked at employer healthcare and fix it. Because as you all see, it's like healthcare in America is broken. I mean, you think about going to a hospital nowadays, it looks more like a luxury hotel. I mean,
there's right.
marble floors, chandeliers, some of them have valet parking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, wait, where is my money going?
Right.
If it's not going to actually creating better patient outcomes, why, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't want to go into a hospital that looks like it's run down from a third world country. But at the same time, like, maybe there's something wrong here. How do we fix this? And so that's what I love doing is investing time with employers, helping them understand different ways to look at healthcare, to be creative, find ways to bring those costs down, to bring affordability and accessibility, more importantly, to their employees and their families. And that is a really relationship-driven process. There's so many in this industry, it's very transactional. Like, I can go out into the market and bring you a whole bunch of quotes, pick some plans, pick the cheapest option here, and go see you later. That's not what I'm about. As a consultant, I'm trying to take care of people and come up with creative strategies and solutions that are actually affecting what they need.
Yeah, and you really have to go through that deep dive, because otherwise you get to the ambulance door and you find out it's not covered or whatever, right?
Right. And part of why healthcare is broken is that it's really been bought the same way for 50 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
In that typical process for most employers is, you know, they will go out to their broker, their consultant, say, hey, your renewal's coming out in a few months, and they're going to expect that they get the renewal. And it's usually the broker's being reactive. They wait for the insurance company to send the renewal.
Right.
And the typical process is, oh, hey, you're getting a 10% increase. And if you're the employer going, well, we can't absorb 10%, go back to the carrier and get us a lower rate. Well, the carrier and the broker know this. And so the dirty little secret in the insurance world is they expect you to push back. And so they build some cushion into those rates and go, okay, we'll bring it back to a 7%. So the broker comes back and says, hey, I got you a 7% versus a 10%. And you go, well, 7's better than 10, right? Well, okay, but you have really no idea what's going on, and there's a lack of transparency. There's a lack of accountability. And one of the reasons why I partnered with USI in this quest to fix things was they're changing the model.
Right.
And so one of the ways that USI really talks through that process and kind of help people understand who we are and why we're different. So just a little background on USI. So as you said earlier, you know, we are the largest privately held insurance broker in the United States. So we are a $3 billion insurance company, insurance brokerage. And we've got 10,000 plus employees all over the country. In Texas, we are the largest broker. And that gives us some real buying power with the carriers. But it also means that we've got a lot of resources here in Texas. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's 300 plus of our team members here. And because we strive for increased transparency and to reduce those surprises, we created this acronym to help kind of explain what we do. It's called the One Advantage, and it stands for Omni Network and Enterprise. So what that means is in the insurance world, there has been a very poor job of providing decision makers with any meaningful data analytic tools to make decisions. And so about 10 years ago, USI said, we are going to make a significant investment into a technology platform. And so that is what we call Omni, our knowledge engine. So what they did is they took the experiences of all 150,000 of our clients, the tens of thousands of our consultants, and put them together into this platform so that can aggregate all of that. It's accessible by all of our consultants across the country. And so when we take a company's data, what we know about them, we can put that into Omni, and it will actually create meaningful solutions with a financial impact that they can actually analyze in real time, all at the touch of a button. Then there's the network, which is really the most important piece for us. So 90% of our competition, most employers will get a consultant and an account manager assigned to their team, and that's it for the most part. What USI did was we went out and hired a whole bunch of industry insiders to come work for us. And so one of our examples here in Texas, our doctor of pharmacy, Dr. Dominic Vu, he used to run the pharmacy department at Memorial Hermann Hospital in Houston. And so we brought him on board 6 years ago. And so his sole purpose is to help our clients with pharmacy, which is the biggest driver of cost in healthcare right now. Mm-hmm. And so what he does, he reviews those pharmacy contracts and makes little changes on the back end that make no impact for the employee and their families in terms of being able to access those pharmaceutical right. drugs. But for the employer, it saves them thousands, if not millions of dollars. So in the 6 years Dr. Vu has been with us, he's saved our clients over $50 million just by making those small changes on their pharmacy contracts. And so not only do we have people like Dr. Vu, we've got underwriters that used to work for the insurance companies now working in-house for us. We've got compliance attorneys. We've got employment law attorneys. We've got a whole slew of folks that when we work with an employer, they're part of that team with us. And so the best part for me is I may know a lot, but there's still a lot that I don't know. And so when someone asks a question that I don't know, I'm not going to Google and doing a quick right. search and saying, hey, what's this? No, I'm going to the expert that's on my team and saying, hey, let me introduce you to Dr. Vu, or let me introduce you to Sandy, or let me introduce you to who so-and-so. And they can work directly with that individual, and it's not a game of telephone of me relaying questions back and forth. They'll talk to them directly, which is a big differentiator compared to some of our competitors who may have some of these same technical resources, but they're not quite bringing them to the table unless you're a really large employer and that doesn't really help you.
Right.
And then when you bring the two of those together, our enterprise, so you can have great technology and you can have great technical resources, but if they're not working together, it's kind of all for naught. And so what our process is every single day we are constantly talking and huddling with one another, talking about the issues going on with our clients, talking about how those impact what we're seeing with them and how it can affect our prospects right. that are similar to them. And before we even show up to that client or to that prospect's office, we've already discussed in depth what they may be seeing, propose some solutions, and then actually have that available to talk through and go, look, we know that this may not be the perfect set, but we've gone through a process to kind of figure out what are other similar groups to them going through and what have we done to help them. And so that's our really big process, which is great because when you think about buying insurance, there you really don't know what's going on. And so we try to help minimize that. So part of it is
I have no idea what's going on.
So I kind of look at this. Think about when the last time you bought a car.
Mm-hmm.
What if you could have gone to the car lot with the guy who was the sales manager? And so the sales manager knows all the invoice prices of all the vehicles sitting on the lot.
Right.
And so he knows that, okay, this car is worth $20,000, but the MSRP says $30,000. And typically when you go to buy a car, you're trying to negotiate backwards.
Yeah.
What if you could actually negotiate from the point of what you know that price is, but outside of what the inflated profit is, and then make the car company, the car dealer, justify why they should charge you more? So we're doing the same to the insurance companies. Not only are underwriters going to the insurance company and saying, hey, this is what they should be paying. Why should you charge them more and get them to justify that? And then part of that process, we start so much earlier than our competitors because we have such a large book of business in Texas. We get our clients' renewals for December 1st and January 1st in July, way before our competitors. And part of that reason is because they want that business to renew, they will be more willing to give them a discount.
Right.
And so we get the lion's share of those discounts for our clients even before our competitors even see their clients' yep. renewals. So by the time that our competitors are renewing their clients, there's not really much left for them to even get from a discount.
I mean, the sea of navigating which policy is right for your business is atrocious. I think we've talked to 5 or 7 or more people.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like we're any wiser when we leave, right? It's right. like you don't leave the room. You're like, oh, man, I get it. That made sense. You know, why didn't they just explain it that way? Like, we haven't found that yet. And then whatever plan we had for 2025, and I'm gonna just put this out there because she has. But yeah, like my vice president came in one day and said, "Congrats, we're pregnant." You know, she's pregnant. You know, and I mean, like my stomach sank. I was like, okay, now we got to figure that out for the business, right? Because she works here, and it's our responsibility to provide great health care, I think, for our employees and our partners. But we had to completely revamp because what we had covered for her wasn't going to cover anything.
Right.
Right. It wasn't even going to cover the doctor visit, I think she said, right, or something?
Yeah, anything regarding the pregnancy is not covered by what we currently have.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So
we scrambled.
I was like, you could have asked us ahead of time if you were planning on.
Hey, before you get pregnant, hey, let us know what your bedroom schedule is. Like, I might be crossing some HR lines there.
I wish I am
HR.
Yeah. But no, like, so having a person, you know, that knows your business back and forth and can handle those changes, I think is really key. Otherwise, you're just paying for whatever. I mean,
and that's really what a lot of people typically experience. I was talking with a friend recently who their business, they saw a 40% increase at their renewal. We cannot do that. And not only were they looking at a 40% increase, they got the renewal so late that there really wasn't much time to really analyze options. And so they come back with an option and go, hey, well, here's something else. And while it lowered the cost, they had no idea what they were buying. They just go, oh, it's a lower cost and, you know, this is supposed to be better for us. But didn't explain the process, and now they're locked into something that they're like, what do we do? I'm like, well, there are ways forward, and it's going to take some work, and we can help with that process. But this is going to be a longer issue, and unfortunately, that broker that worked with them really wasn't looking out for the best interest of that of their client. They were really looking out for the best interest of themselves.
Right.
And I see that more and more play out in our industry where, we're trying to win business. We're trying to help people. But at the end of the day, are you really taking care of your client or are you taking care of yourself? And I've always been of the belief, if you take care of other people, they will take care of you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's go back 10 years ago, right? Fresh into the business. Your dad said, let's rock and roll. I got you. Like, how do you get started, man? Like, how do you, it's like, all right, I guess I'll start with one, right?
Yeah.
What relationship to go from there?
It was a major shift for me. So, you know, at that time, I was working in the oil and gas industry as a sales and marketing specialist.
Done it. I'm 41 now. Actually, I'll be 41 Saturday. But I only share that to say I was smiling and dialing like old school. Were you doing that stuff? Like,
well, so in the oil industry, it was very different. So it was a lot of drive out to a rig site and literally cold call a company man.
Okay, I never had a,
in person.
I at least had to be in the office.
Yeah, it was not that. Like we had a team that did kind of internal, but my job was, okay, this is your sales territory, and you have an existing set of clients, but you're also to go out to these other rig sites and try to win business that way. And it's a very different industry. I don't know
how it could go back. I mean, because like nowadays, if we have a customer that's already on the books, got their credit card, it's like all you have to do is really call them, get a recording, or say, John, you in? He's like, I'm doing. You know, let's do it. Execute live.
Yeah.
But back then, like everything had to be signed on paper, like printed, driven to the oil site. Yep.
Yeah, you that's know. Exactly.
Do you have a pen? My pen ran out. Not who's got a pen? Does somebody have a freaking pen?
Well, and a lot of times it was like I would go to the office, print out the tickets, then go out to the rig sites, and I would have to get a stamp and a signature because then I'd take that back, upload it, and then they would, you know, send that off to the companies to get paid. And I had avoided oil and gas my whole life, even coming out of West Texas. I'm like, I don't want to go into oil and gas. I don't want to go into oil because I'd seen the cyclical nature. And really, my background is aerospace science. Mm-hmm. So I ended up in oil and gas because I had was working in nonprofits.
I think I just responded to a Craigslist ad. That's and like we weren't even drilling for oil; we were just scamming people. But I didn't know. It was like 19. You know, I didn't know. I mean, we were literally scamming people, but I didn't know. It's like one of my first jobs. I couldn't figure out why my boss had two Hummers. You know, and we were going to the bar every, you know, Friday.
Yeah.
On the company dime. I was like, man, endless money. It's like.
Well, and it was crazy. Yeah, I had an expense account, and my boss was like, just spend money. Take people to lunch. Bring them, you know, coffee. Bring them and just spend money. And I'm like, and I got scolded one time for not spending enough money.
Yeah.
Which was a weird concept. I'm like, what do you mean I'm not spending enough money? I thought I was, you know, trying not to spend money. Like, it's like, no, that's not this industry. So, you know, 2015 price of oil tanks, and, you know, I ended up getting laid off. I called my dad. I'm like, hey, I got laid off today. He's like, well, why don't you meet me for lunch? And he's like,
yeah,
hey, I've got an idea for you.
I got laid off too. I got
April Fool's.
No, I came back from lunch and the phones were gone. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that's how I lost my job in oil and gas.
You know, I drove to the office and they go, hey, by the way, we're laying you off. Give us the keys to the company truck and we'll take you home.
Wow.
Oh, that's fun.
Can I drive one last time?
And so I'm having lunch with my dad, and he's like, hey, why don't you come work for me? And he had just sold his firm to a big competitor of mine now. And I'm like, well, okay. Yeah, I thought, well, there's some financial stability within the insurance industry. Growing up, there was nothing that I had never needed that wasn't taken care of. We always did great family vacation. I'm like, okay, this is a good career path, obviously, mm-hmm. for him. Mm-hmm. I need some stability as well. And so it was a little bit of a process, but yeah, my start day was April 1st. And so getting started, you know, I had to go out and get my insurance license. So I had to study for that exam.
I think I tried that, failed it. I also failed the real estate exam. I'm just not I passed college, but it's
that's all that counts.
But
it's,
yeah, but like all those little exams, you know, because like everybody, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, right? So someone was like, "You should sell houses." I was like, "Sweet, I'll take the test." Failed it. I also failed a PI index to be a flight attendant. I remember an American. I'm just like a horrible test taker.
But so I got licensed. And at that point, like, I could go out and set appointments, but I couldn't sell anything until I was licensed.
Right.
So I get licensed, and I am going out and trying to, you know, work on existing relations. Who did I know that I go talk to? And one of my colleagues who was on the property and casualty said, hey, I've got this prospect up in the little town of Andrews. Why don't you go with me and we'll stop by and see anything? Because for him, it was a decent, because they were a small oil and gas trucking company. And we walk in the door, and I immediately recognized the owner's wife. We had worked together at one of the nonprofits I had worked for. And so we're talking, and I just shared, look, this is what I'm doing now, you know, working on health insurance for employers. And I'm just like, I have no idea what the process is, but I just said, all I knew was get them to give me, you know, an employee census, and we'll go from there. And like, well, we don't have an insurance plan, but we know we need it. We've been kind of doing something semi-illegal where they were still, the owner's brother had a bigger company,
yeah.
And they were on their insurance, which I'm like, well, technically you can't do that, but, you know, I'm not going to report in that realm. But if you want to get on your own plan, here's what I need. I need an employee census so they get that to me, and then I, you know, go back, and the way my dad made me learn is like, you don't have any clients, so you don't get an account manager yet. You get to be your own account manager while you're learning the process. I'll help you, and his account manager would kind of assist, but I was to learn the whole process of how to submit a census to the insurance companies, getting back those quotes, reading the quotes, and then putting them into a spreadsheet to then go back out and present to the clients. And so we go back out there, and I present, hey, here's three options that I think will be in your budget range. And so they finally pick one, and I go, okay, great. We'll submit it, and we'll get it, you know, filed. And I was, you know, I won a client. It was like $1,500 annual revenue. But it was, for me, like, that was the first big one to get. And I remember being so excited about getting the business. And the owner was a big Texas Rangers fan. So I went out and bought a baseball. And then I put our company logo on the baseball and took him the baseball as just kind of a thank you of, you know, being part of, you know, being my first client. Mm-hmm. And they stayed a client of mine for 3 or 4 years until they just finally had to, close the business because it just wasn't going to, they just couldn't continue
right.
in the climate. And so from that time period, I would start to learn a little bit more, work with bigger and bigger clients. And I remember my first really big client, which to me really big was anybody over 100 employees. And it was a group out in West Texas in the Lubbock area. And they said, look, our broker's bringing us stuff late. We don't know what we're getting. We're at a point where, we know we've grown past the small group market, but, we don't know what's out there. And they were an existing client on our property and casualty side. So I said, well, here's how we can take the process. Here's what I would do. We update your data. We try to get the claims information, and we'll go out to the market and move you to the middle market. And so they agreed to move their business to me, what known as a broker of record change.
Yeah.
So a lot of employers think that you can't change your broker until you renew. And they said, no, you can change your broker at any point in time. If you feel like the person who's you're working with is not doing a good job, you can technically fire them.
Right.
And assign somebody else to take over your account. And so they gave me the broker record, and we went out to the market, and so they had 100 employees, and it was $50,000 account for me, which was great. Like this is a bigger account, and we worked together for several years until 2020 happened, and we all kind of went our different ways. But it was that process where I don't want to spend my time chasing
right.
smaller accounts because it is very much more transactional.
Well, and somebody once told me it's the same amount of effort presenting to everybody, right? So you can pitch to someone, make a large transaction, have a lot of value, build a lot of relationship, but that same energy is exerted pitching a transactional thing.
Exactly. And so I was trying to get away from the smaller group stuff.
Right.
And focus on the middle market employers. And so in 2020, I left the company that my dad was at and went to the carrier side working as a broker rep.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was now working with brokers all across West Texas, North Texas. And I learned a lot from a lot of different brokers. And there was one broker in particular up in Amarillo who was really doing something different. He's like, I'm breaking apart insurance plans and building them from the ground up. And the way he was doing it brought employers significant cost savings. We're talking 20-30% cost savings
yeah.
compared to the big carriers. And I'm like, what are you doing that's different? And so he kind of shared some of his strategy was leveraging what's known as direct primary care or advanced primary care. When you think about healthcare, 80-85% of most people, their only use of their health insurance is the primary care. They're not getting, sick and going to the hospital. They don't have big chronic issues. They're just going when, hey, I've got the flu, somebody write me a prescription,
mm-hmm.
Or I'm going for an annual exam or things like that. That's most people. But because insurance has gotten so expensive, they make it harder for people to go to the primary care. You've got $40, $50 copay just to right. see your primary care doctor. So people go, I'll put off what's going
sometimes
on.
Sometimes the doctor does it. Sometimes they can't do anything.
Yeah. Right.
Like I had the flu. But I recovered from the flu, but then I had like that dry cough thing that would linger. So I went back and luckily he's cool. He didn't charge me because he was like, I can't do anything. Like you're just whatever. It took 2 minutes and he's like, I'm not going to charge you. I'm like, thank God. Like otherwise it'd been like $75 just for him to tell me he can't do anything.
Right. And I mean, and think about that process of even going to the doctor. Like you call the doctor to make an appointment, and if they can't get you in right away, it's like, well, we can get you in next week.
Right.
And so you show up and then you sit in the waiting room for 2 or 3 hours. It's like, oh, I came here at the time you told me to and you're not ready.
You know what's so weird about that? So I go to a total men's primary. It's like, I mean, anyone can go, but whatever. So I remember walking into my last visit and like going to the bathroom. I was like, hey, I use the bathroom. She's like, yeah, yeah. And I walk past the doctor's office and he's like just sitting there on his iPhone, which is fine. That's his business. But like you said, it's like, okay, my appointment was at noon. It's now 12:20. And last time I checked on you, you were just chilling in your waiting room.
Right. And so, I mean, and so, like, by the time they finally call you back, they go take you to the exam room, and then you're sitting in there for another 20, 30 minutes before the doctor even shows up. You know, maybe a PA comes and asks a couple of questions and inputs some stuff in a laptop, which, by the way, do you know what they're doing when they're putting stuff in the laptop?
I thought putting stuff in the laptop.
So the
you actually tricked me. I have no idea.
So I think people think, oh, they're just writing down what I'm telling them.
Yeah, like a pre-interview, right? So, like, what's your symptoms? You're like, oh, I'm coughing here. My head's hurting. I'm not sick, but I think I am, or whatever.
So they are doing that part, but the reason they're doing it is not necessarily to keep track of records for the doctor. It's so that they can file everything with the insurance company.
Gotcha.
And so by the time the doctor finally comes, he's like, well, okay, you know, here's my laptop. I'm going to talk to you. And say, okay.
Yeah.
7 minutes later, they're like, I'm out the door, and here's what I'm going to do for you. It's like, okay, I wasted half a day for you just to say I'm going to send a prescription to Walgreens.
Right.
And you know, that's typical healthcare. People, and because of that, people are avoiding going to the doctor's office.
Right.
And so what's happening is because they're delaying care, by the time something actually massive happens – we're catching up on the back end. It's costing more money in the healthcare system because we've waited so long. And so in a direct primary care or advanced primary care perspective, we're lowering the cost of getting to the primary care doctor to zero. We want people, like, we want you to text your doctor, FaceTime your doctor, call your doctor and say, hey, here's what's going on.
It sucks too, though. Have you ever done like a tele thing or like a video thing? Oh, I don't know. I guess I turned you off. I meant to turn hers off.
If you don't like me, just say that.
Yeah, no, I've done that, and then they misdiagnosed it anyway.
Well, and so you've got telemed, but instead of actually doing it with a doctor you've never even talked to, like you're talking to your doctor.
Right.
And kind of going, hey, here's what's going on. They may say, hey, let's jump on a call real quick so I can do a visual check. And go, okay, you know what? Come in the office. Well, when they tell you come in the office, it's not make you sit and wait. It's you get there. Grab a bottle of water. Hey, come on back. And you're not sitting in a sterile exam room. You're sitting in a room like this. It's their office. They may have an exam table. They may have some other things in there that are, but you're in their office and you're getting to spend a full 30 minutes, 60 minutes with the doctor answering the questions. And they're going to take care of what they can in office. And if they can't, then what we've built behind it is like a concierge piece where they're going to say, we're going to send you to, you know, wherever we need to, whether it's an imaging facility, whether it's a lab to get tests done, or, hey, I'm going to send you to a specialist. They're sending you to quality centers of excellence, which are, again, lowering those overall cost. And because the way that we're able to do this, we're really trying to build health plans that are no copays, no deductibles, your pharmacy drugs for the most part, no cost. Now, there's still going to be some
$4 or something.
Yeah, special. Well, no. I mean, really, it's the high-dollar drugs.
Okay.
We want people to come use
what
they need. And when there is a big issue, then we're using a process known as reference-based pricing.
I feel you. I'm part of the group where I just wish insurance would work, right? It's like we have it, but we have it meant we're mentally geared towards if I lose my arm, right? It's like, oh, I have it in case I die, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
But if I'm sick, it's like the option is just avoid. It's like, oh, you should go to the doctor. It's like, I'm not going to the doctor. It's going to cost 3 hours. It's going to cost $80 copay. He's probably going to say, I can't help you anyway. And he's going to give me some bullshit prescription that's probably not going to work. Whatever. Yeah. Or I can't get it till tomorrow, regardless.
That's by what then, happens when better. You wait last minute, though.
Because I'm conditioned.
I'm just saying.
I'm the victim.
Just saying, I'm a better safe than sorry person.
But, I mean, you know, it's just part of that's you're right. It's the way that most people have been conditioned because the cost of getting to the primary care has gone up. And then it's just the process of being there. You waste so much time. It's like, look, I know what's wrong for the most part. I know the symptoms.
Right.
I just need someone to write a prescription for me. And in the arrangement that we've been trying to build with this direct primary care, advanced primary care space is to say, look, you can have access to your doctor and think of it like concierge medicine without the concierge cost. And then we build in on the back end for when you break your arm or when you have cancer or when you have these big things, and we're bringing people to the right places. And so that's, as I learned that process along the way and then working with some more nimble brokers and then finally coming to USI going, okay, now I have the team and resources to really do something big with middle market employers and then find ways to then bring this down market.
Yeah.
We do have a team that does the small market, the small employer market. And so we're trying to find ways to help them bring some of those big cost control savings down to small employers, because for most part, small employers feel like there is no other option.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of options, but you have to get out of the mindset that so many employers have bought into is, I need the name brand insurance company. I need Blue Cross. I need Aetna. I need United Healthcare. If that was such a need, then why do people feel so frustrated that they need to go out and murder a CEO?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, no, you don't want the insurance company. You feel conditioned because that's what you've been taught. You have to have that. And part of it is, well, because we've been conditioned that we need access to these networks. Well, in those networks, not only do you have good doctors and good facilities that are doing things right and trying to reduce costs and provide high quality care, you also have the ones that aren't. And you can't exclude them unless you get out of them.
Right.
And like I tell people all the time, a medical student with a D average who graduates.
I love the story. I already know where this is going.
What do you call them?
You call them a doctor.
Exactly. Exactly. And so how do you know the doctor you're going to is high quality?
Yeah.
Or gosh, low
I used to do physician staffing for a while. Man, it sucks.
I also worked at a physician recruiting firm.
Yeah. Because they do the background check, right?
Right.
So that's part of it. And you just, I mean, you're like, what? This guy, what? Like, oh, you know, just writing prescriptions left and right, got busted or was addicted to whatever he was writing.
It's right. And so it's just, you know, that's what we've been conditioned. And what I'm telling people is like, look, we can still bring the same value that you're used to with these name brand insurance companies at lower cost. And,
right.
I always kind of use this analogy. I said, I can go on Amazon and buy a brand new pair of running shoes that's probably made in the same factory in Mexico that Nike's making their shoes. It's probably a Nike without the swoosh for half the cost. What am I paying for? Am I paying for the logo or am I paying for the shoe that's going to bring the same quality?
My son's 8 years old. He's actually 9 now. I forgot. He just had his birthday. But he's all about that swoosh, man. He's all about it. I could care less. These are actually Brooks. They're way more comfortable than Nikes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've been so conditioned. Oh, I have to have that logo on my ID card. Like, no, you don't.
My mom does that with oatmeal. She'll only have the name brand oatmeal. She won't get the great value brand. I said, Mom, it's literally the same. She's like, no, it's not. Same thing with mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm. I don't play with mayonnaise.
She will only use Hellman's mayonnaise.
Duke's forever.
And
now, ketchup,
I'm like,
I only eat, like, obviously, I eat ketchup when we go out to eat, but like at home, I buy the organic stuff. It's tasty. It's so good. It is so good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but you think about I'll use Aldi as an example because they have white labeled so many products.
Mm-hmm.
The products and the ingredients are the exact same ones that so many other brands. I mean, and I always like, look, the quality of their products actually is similar to what you'd find at Whole Foods
for the
most part. But you're paying a quarter of the price.
Did you know there's a store in South Dallas, that sells almost about to be expired food?
Yeah,
like crackers, whatever it is. Like a pint of ice cream at Kroger is $5 typically. You can get 3 of them for $5, and it's just the sell by date is like coming up in a week or something.
Well, and the thing about the sell by date, it's not necessarily expiration date. It's just
not at all. Yeah,
we just need to sell it by this date, and usually you have a couple of days afterwards and it's still good. And I've seen a lot of, you know, like I forget the name of the company, but it's like Misfit Foods almost, where it's just the food didn't look appeasing, or, you know, and they sell that direct to consumer, or there are cost plus food stores where it's like, we only put 10% markup on what we're paying.
Right.
And to keep prices low, I'm like, I like that. It's kind of like, you know, Mark Cuban's cost plus pharmacy program. They're only putting a 10% markup on what they would pay to get those drugs.
Right.
Versus, you know, all the other things, which pharmacy is, it's such a,
I could never be a pharmacist.
Well, it just
I worked at a drugstore, and like that sucks. So why would you want to be a pharmacist? Why would you want to go through all that school and then just to work in a drug
store? Right. Well, and that's really the biggest cost driver is not necessarily the pharmacy, but the drugs themselves is driving up cost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're so intertwined. So many people don't realize that the process of buying drugs, typically when you have insurance, the insurance company then partners what's known as a pharmacy benefit manager. That actually is the one going out and procuring all the drugs from the pharmaceutical companies. And so they're negotiating with the pharmacy companies, saying, hey, we're going to have X number of members that are going to be buying these drugs. We want you to give us a discount. And they'll get that discount, and then they'll kind of mark up their price back to the insurance company.
Right.
And then depending on how the contract's written, the pharmacy or the pharmacy benefit manager or the insurance company gets the rebates, not the consumer. And so one of the bigger intertwined ones is CVS Caremark. So CVS Caremark is a parent company of multiple companies, but the three biggest are CVS, Aetna, and Caremark. So CVS, that's the retail store. There's 10,000 retail outlets for CVS. Aetna is the third largest insurance company in the United States, about 27 million members. And Caremark is one of the three largest pharmacy benefit managers in the country.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the three largest pharmacy benefit managers control 80% of the market. So going back to CVS Caremark, CVS, Aetna, Caremark, of those three, which one do you think is the largest profit center?
So the questions were CVS, Aramark, and what was the other?
Aetna.
Aetna. Which one's the largest
profit
center? Profit. My first guess is Aetna, but my gut's telling me it's CVS.
It's pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, it's Caremark. Yeah. Caremark makes more money.
Were you not listening to the last 5 minutes?
Didn't I tell you I just failed my flight attendant test, real estate school? I'm a horrible test taker.
Yeah, it's not a test.
It was a question.
It's anxiety. I can't. I don't know.
But yeah, so Caremark makes more money than CVS retail or Aetna.
Right.
And so if you are a Aetna member... Here's how many times CVS Caremarks get paid when you buy a drug. You go to CVS to buy a $10 prescription. You pay them that $10. That money then also turns into what's paying back to Caremark.
Yeah.
And then you paid your premium to Aetna. So they're getting paid at least three times off of that one $10 exchange. And it just continues to roll up. And... as they've said, like, oh, we, you know, Congress has said we're trying to find ways to put pressure to reduce pharmacy drugs.
Right.
Well, they know that. And so what they're going to do is just move the goalpost. Say, look, okay, we did this. We played by your rules, but we're going to adjust the cost here and pass that on to consumers. There is no win unless you get out of that and go to true, transparent pharmacy benefit managers that are maybe smaller. Or you look at those pharmacy contracts and find a way to get the rebates at least coming back to
mm-hmm.
the employer and the consumer to reduce costs. And that's where, like I mentioned earlier, Dr. Vu, that's what he does. Like he goes and looks at those and say, look, we're going to make some adjustments and redirect those dollars back to a plan. And so typically where we see helping employers see that significant impact, they're getting 20 to 30% of their pharmacy spend back in those rebates. And so if you've got, you know, I was talking with a group that's about 300 employees. That's about $200,000 to $400,000 coming back to them.
Yeah.
When we get those rebates back.
Would you say, Kevin, you can pretty much help any particular type of company, or how would you describe
your
best fit would
be? So my area of expertise to do the things that I do, typically employers with 100 or more employees up to about 5,000 employees. We do have resources for smaller employees. So if somebody's like, hey, I need help, like reach out and I'm happy to have the conversation with you, connect you with the resources. We do have a small market team that I work really close with because there are times where I have a conversation with a group and go, you know what, you're right on that cusp. I'm going to have my partner Chris and his team help you. And there are times where he had a group that he reached out to down in Waxahachie, thinking there are maybe 40 employees, or 130 employees. Like, oh, I need to pass this up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that just goes to the specialty. I mean, you don't want to be master of every category or whatever, right? It's like, look, you're a bigger company. I have a team that can help you make sure that that's the fit for you. I think that's more valuable, right?
And like I tell people all the time, like if someone reaches out, I'm going to quarterback that whole mm-hmm. process. I mean, we've got a meeting this afternoon with a small church that said, hey, we need help. I said, well, I've got a church specialist and a small group specialist. I'll bring them both. And the relationship that I had was with the pastor who said, hey, can you help? I'm like, sure, I'm happy to help. Let me bring the resources that are actually going to be the ones to help, and I'm just here to quarterback the whole situation. And so for me personally, anybody over 100 employees up to 5,000, because really once you get beyond 5,000 employees, that's a whole different realm where while we have companies that are much larger than that, that's not my area of expertise.
Right.
Because that you really do move into a whole new stratosphere at that point. But really anybody, 100 to 5,000, really a sweet spot, it's 150 to 500.
Right.
But we, if somebody goes, hey, I need help, please, reach out. I'm happy to put the right resources in front of you.
Well, and one thing I love that you haven't said once, I don't think, is that we're the cheapest, race to the bottom, right? It's all about value, the right fit, because anybody can give a lower rate. Right?
Yeah. I mean, as I learned kind of going through the process, if you live on price, you will die on price.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then if you're an employer looking for the lowest rate, you're going to get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And while that may mean you've got the lowest option, which typically means you have the highest deductibles, the lowest coinsurance, almost no co-pays, mm-hmm. where you've got to be first dollar all the way up, that's not a benefit either. If your co-pay is $6,000 and your insurance really doesn't kick in until you've met that.
Yeah.
Like
somebody told me that same thing. You get what you pay for, but they say it a different way. You don't get what you don't pay for. And that's basically like those customers that, hey, like y'all want the cheapest, most affordable, whatever, but they actually want the VIP service. And they're like, well, I'm not getting the level of service that I expected. It's like, no, you paid for this.
Right.
But it sounds like you actually want to be up here.
Right. Like, yeah, you're going to get the value of what you pay for. And
right.
And the way that we kind of look at it, regardless of what an employer does, if an employer wants a low cost option and that's what they pick, depending on what their company size is, what that revenue looks like for us, we're going to provide value at that level, and so for us, when you're over 100 employees, you're getting that full value of the team that I have behind me. And if you're a smaller employer, we still have a lot of great resources that are available to you. You just may not get the pharmacy doctor and the underwriter because there's not anything that can be done in that small market other than just the partnerships that we have with other vendors, other carriers that are doing some creative things.
So, Kevin, if we want to get in touch with you, where do we find you? Which rocks are you hiding underneath? Which networking events are you at?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. I love being on LinkedIn. If you're an HR professional in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I'm on the board at Mid-Cities HR Association, which meets in Euless. There's also the Fort Worth HR, North Texas Society for Human Resource Management in Denton, and Dallas HR. You can find me at those. But you can find me on LinkedIn. Please reach out. You can email me at kevin.dawson@usi.com. I'm always happy to have a conversation.
Perfect, man. We're so blessed that you came out to see us today. And if anybody needs help with their insurance, man, it's just call Kevin, man. He'll come out. He'll take you to lunch.
Spend the big bucks.
Nothing's off the table. You get that expensive drink, man. He's got you. No, man, my hat's off to you. 10 years is a long time. You should be very proud of that. I'm sure you are. And I'm looking to hire my dad at my company, to be honest with you. If there was, last in closing, if there was anything else you could have done in your lifetime, what would have been?
If I could have done my dream job, I'd have been a fighter pilot.
Nice. Yeah, I would have been a commercial pilot. I actually went to school for my private pilot license, but I got scared. I quit when we learned crosswind training. I bailed. It was too much for me. So awesome, my friend. Well, thanks so much again, and we'll see you around.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep.